Hello and welcome to the July episode of the IFS Foundation's monthly podcast. My name is Kasia Gilewska and I'm part of the communications team at the Foundation. Today, I'm joined by the chair of the International Accounting Standards Board, Hans Hugewest, and the board's vice chair, Sue Lloyd. In this podcast, we are going to take you through the latest discussions and decisions made by the board in the month of July. We will primarily focus on this month's board meeting, which took place between the 22nd and the 25th of July. And we will also touch upon other key developments of the past month. So before we discuss the board meeting itself, let's quickly talk about another important meeting held a couple of weeks ago. This was the meeting with the Accounting Standards Advisory Forum, or as it's more popularly known, ASAF.
Yes, Kasia. Well, most people will know that ASAF is an important discussion partner for the ISB. It's a forum to meet with accounting standard setters from around the world. And at this latest meeting, it's not just us discussing our proposals, but also standard setters from around the world discussing their projects. And this time we had some interesting presentations, one of which was especially interesting from the UK Financial Reporting Council, which did a project on intangibles, which led to an interesting discussion. As people know, most intangibles tend to escape the balance sheet because they're very hard to recognize, very hard to measure. At the same time, we all know that they are can be very important for the profitability and value of a company. What was interesting about the FRC presentation was that when you look at initiatives around the world where people are proposing that intangibles should be brought to the balance sheet, that actually most of those proposals are very modest because everybody recognizes that it is very hard to do. In September, I will go to Korea. The Korean standard setter is also working on intangibles, and they are actually going to propose to make sort of an alternative balance sheet, including intangibles. So I'm very curious as to what exactly they are going to propose.
Great. Thank you, Hans. So let's move to the July board meeting. It was a little bit different this month as we had visitors from across the pond. Hans?
Yes, for one day we had a joint educational meeting with the US Standard Setter, the FESB. We try to meet with our American friends for once a year. As you know, in the past we worked together very closely in convergence projects, trying to get our standards, the IFRS standards, aligned with US GAAP. That period is over. That's why we are now mainly talking to our partners in ASAF. But we think it's useful to have at least one meeting a year to make sure that we do not diverge too much and that perhaps we can even get some more spontaneous convergence over time. And well, there are a lot of projects that both boards are working on, and we discussed, for example, financial instruments with characteristics of equity, which is also a project for the FESB. We talked about IBOR reform, and we also talked about primary financial statements, where the FESB actually took a quite different approach than us. We have focused on creating new subtotals, and they are working more on disaggregation of the numbers. So a different approach, and therefore it was useful to talk to each other.
Mm-hmm. And it was lovely to host them. So let's move to the board meeting. This was a special board meeting in that the board concluded its technical discussions on three different projects. It gave the technical staff the green light to draft the consultation documents that will call for stakeholders' views. So the three projects were goodwill and impairment, primary financial statements, and rate-regulated activities. Okay, let's deal with them one at a time. First, a topic that is as hot as steamy as London's current heatwave, goodwill and impairment. The topic provoked a heated debate last month, at the end of which the board decided by the narrowest of margins, only one vote, to recommend retaining impairment only as its preferred approach in the board's forthcoming consultation document. So, Hans, was this month's meeting equally animated?
Well, actually, it was a very calm discussion because we were just talking due process, basically. And due process tends to be very boring. So we didn't really have a technical discussion. The focus was on confirming that we have followed all the steps in the due process handbook, and which are the procedural rules that we have to follow as a standard setter. We confirmed that our consultation will take the form of a discussion paper, so we are not ready yet for an exposure draft. It will be a discussion paper, and we decided for a lengthy comment period, given the importance and complications of this topic. It will be a comment period of 180 days. We expect to publish the consultation document around the end of this year, so people will have the first half of 2020 to give their comments. It's also interesting that our American friends, who I just talked about, are going through a similar exercise. They are going to present very open questions to their constituents also about the question, for example, should amortization of goodwill be brought back. The tentative decision of our board was not to do so.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So another topic that has been brought to the board this month is rate-regulated activities. What's this month's progress on that, Sue?
Well, firstly, just to remind everybody that we've been working on a new accounting model with the objective of giving investors, the users of financial statements, better information about a company's incremental rights and obligations when they undertake what we're calling rate-regulated activities. And we focused on two very specific technical areas this month related to this model and also a due process point. So on the technical issues, the board decided that the recognition and measurement principles of IFRS 3, our BizCom standard, won't be applied in the accounting model for regulatory assets and liabilities. So put simply, the board decided to provide an exception to the recognition and measurement principles of IFRS 3 for those regulatory assets acquired and regulatory liabilities that are assumed when someone undertakes a business combination. And the other technical issue we discussed was how the accounting model that we've developed would apply if the term of the regulatory agreement is shorter than the period over which the amounts are expected to be recovered.
Mm-hmm. And would you please tell me what were the due process related decisions?
Sure. So the board decided that for this project, the consultation document will be in the form of an exposure draft, and the comment period will be 120 days. And our plan is to publish the exposure draft in the first half of 2020.
Thank you, Sue. A third project was cleared for takeoff this month, wasn't it, Hans? And one that you, I believe, are particularly interested in.
Well, I think many people are interested in this particular project. It's primary financial statements, a very important project that will provide much more structure in the, especially in the income statement. Here we will be going directly to an exposure draft, given the fact that already a lot of work has been done in the past on performance reporting. Comment period will also be rather long, 180 days, given the importance of the project. And we expect to publish this by the end of the year. And I'm really curious about the response that we are going to get. I think we'll get probably a lot of support from investors, possibly a little bit more of a diverse response from preparers, but let's see.
We are looking forward to receiving all of those comments. So now I can see Sue smiling, which means only one thing. I think it's time to move on to financial instruments. So let's start with IBOR reform and its repercussions on accounting. What's the latest on that, Sue?
So as people might know, we've split our work linked to IBOR reform into two phases. And the first phase deals with what we call pre-replacement issues for the period before contracts are changed and new rates are put in place. And we published an exposure draft with our proposals to deal with this back in May. And basically we were proposing some exceptions to some specific forward-looking hedge accounting requirements, both in IFRS 9 and IAS 39, to deal with the uncertainty until people know exactly how and when their contracts will be changed because of the IBOR replacement process. So at this month's meeting, the staff gave us an analysis of the feedback that we received on the exposure draft from our stakeholders around the world, which was generally very supportive, I think, overall. A few specific areas for us to look at again. One of the key messages that we heard back is that it's really important that we get this first phase wrapped up as soon as we possibly can. Mm-hmm. And because of that urgency, we're taking what's a really unusual step for the board. I think it's only the second time ever that we've done this. We're planning to hold an additional board meeting in August, on the 28th of August, to discuss this project. And we're doing this because by having an extra board meeting, we can publish as quickly as possible for us the amendments to IAS 39 and IFRS 9. Now, another message that we got very loud and clear in the letters we got back is not to put all of our energy into phase one and forget phase two, which deals with what the accounting implications are when rates are actually changed in people's contracts. When we've heard that loud and clear as well, I can reassure people. Actually, we've already been doing a lot of work on this, so the staff are working hard on the sort of phase two issues behind the scenes in parallel with finalising phase one. And I think at the moment our plan would be to begin the public deliberations on those phase two issues probably at the October board meeting.
Mm-hmm. And the board also had discussions on dynamic risk management this month.
That's right. It was a big month for the dynamic risk management project because the staff pulled together for us an overview of what we call the core DRM model and how it works in different circumstances. For those of you who like DRM, there's a 100-page plus slide deck that you can enjoy that's available on the website. So we discussed how the model works, and I think everybody was pretty pleased with the information that it will provide in the financial statements. We also talked about an area of simplification of the core model, which would be involve aggregation of some derivative amounts to simplify application, and the board agreed to that. And we also had an important discussion about whether the model that we're developing should be something that we require people to use, so should it be mandatory, or would it be something that people could choose to use, whether it should be optional. And the board decided that while we think that information would be improved applying this model, because it is still quite a complicated model to apply, we think it's better that it's optional. And so the board agreed with the staff's recommendation that the model be optional. We also talked about disclosure requirements for the project, not in detail, but focusing on what we thought the objective of the disclosure requirements should be, which is very much about providing information in the financial statements to enhance the understanding of risk management activities and the effect on the financial statements. And our next step will be at a future meeting to discuss the process that we're going to go through to do some outreach to get some initial feedback from stakeholders on the core model, which we plan to do before we make the formal decision to proceed with a consultation document.
Great, thank you, sir. So moving forward, one of the other projects discussed during the July meeting was the review and update of the IFRS for SMEs, the standard created for small and medium-sized unlisted companies. The board is conducting a comprehensive review of the IFRS for SMEs standard, discussing whether and how to incorporate new and amended IFRS standards into the SME standard. Hans, what was the focus on this month's discussions?
Yeah, so we looked at a couple of standards to see whether the IFRS for SMEs needed to be updated for changes in these standards or because they were new standards. We looked at IFRS 3, business combinations, IFRS 10, consolidated financial statements, IFRS 11, joint arrangements, and IFRS 15 that recently came into effect, the revenue from contracts with customers, so the revenue recognition standard. And we have decided to take a couple on board, IFRS 3, IFRS 10, and also some amendments to IFRS standards and IFRIC interpretations. And we also decided to take a look at IFRS 15 to see to what extent IFRS for SMEs would have to be adapted for that important standard. So those are the standards that we will be looking at.
Okay, thank you. So all we have covered so far is about financial statements and the notes. The management commentary project is about providing context to the financial statements. What was the topic of this month's discussions, Hans?
Yeah, so the management commentary project is basically about giving guidance to companies how to write their annual report, the narrative part of their annual report. So we are very busy on revising that, and this month we discussed how we can develop guidance on applying qualitative characteristics in the conceptual framework for preparing the management commentary. Mm-hmm. Current practice statement only lists qualitative characteristics without providing any guidance as to how they should be applied. And in this session we focused on two qualitative characteristics, those of relevance and materiality, and we discussed how guidance on these characteristics could be developed into the practice statement. We have also scheduled an additional meeting of the Management Commentary Consultative Group, a group of outsiders that helps us by giving advice as to how to proceed. That will take place in December 2019. And to allow time to consider the input from this meeting, the publication of the exposure draft that we have planned is now expected to be in the second half of 2020 rather than the first half of 2020.
And the board has been also looking into the disclosure initiative project. So would you like to tell us a little bit more about it?
Sure. So we've been undertaking what we call a standards level review of a couple of our existing standards to see if we can improve the disclosure requirements. IAS 19, the pension standard, and IFRS 13, fair value measurement. At this month's meeting, we took a bit of a deep dive into IAS 19, and following discussions that staff and some of the board members have had with investors, we discussed what might be good disclosure objectives for defined benefit plans for IAS 19. And the board discussed a number of detailed and specific disclosure objectives that are designed to reflect and also explain what the information needs of users of financial statements are. And we hope that if we develop good objectives, it will give a much better basis for companies to make good judgments about what they should disclose and indeed what they shouldn't disclose in their financial statements. At a future meeting, we're planning to do a similar deep dive into the disclosure objectives that we propose for IFRS 13 following that same process.
Thank you. And on that note, we have come to an end of the July podcast. Thank you, Hans. Thank you, Sue. And thank you to all of our listeners. If you'd like to share with us your feedback on the podcast, please email communications@ifres.org. You can find a full summary of the board's discussion and decisions on our website, and all the papers prepared for the meeting are also available online, and the board meetings can be followed live. Thank you again, and we look forward to talking with you soon.